Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 39. Tatro paspriśya paneyam Pitva mristam mani pravam.
Pitva mristam mani pravam.
Get these smuggled words. Vriksha sandam upavraja.
Vriksha sandam upavraja.
Saramuratama visat.
Saramuratama visat.
That's an easy one.
Tatra.
There.
There.
Upaspresya,
upaspresya,
touching the water,
touching the water,
paniyam,
paniyam,
in his hand,
pitva,
pitva, drinking,
drinking,
mristam,
mristam,
sweet,
sweet,
mani,
mani,
like jewels,
like jewels,
prabham,
prabham,
effulgent,
effulgent,
vriksha,
vriksha,
of trees,
of trees,
sandam,
sandam,
a grove.
Growth.
Upavraja,
upavraja,
moving up to,
moving up to,
sarama,
sarama,
with Balaram,
Balaram,
ratam,
ratam,
the chariot,
the chariot,
avisa,
avisa,
he mounted,
he mounted.
Translation: the river's sweet water was more effulgent than brilliant jewels. After Lord Krishna had touched it for purification, he drank some from his hand. Then he had the chariot moved near a grove of trees and climbed back on along with Balaram. Next text. Akrurastavupamantriyanivesasaratupari kalindyaradamagatyasanam vidavat achara. Akrura asked the two lords to take their seats on the chariot. Then, taking their permission, he went to a pool in the Yamuna and took his bath, as enjoined in the scriptures. Nimajatasmin sarile japan brahma sanatanam tadeva dadrise kuru rama krishna samanvito. While immersing himself in the water and reciting eternal mantras from the Vedas, Akrura suddenly saw Balaram and Krishna before him. Torata stukatamita sutavanakadundabe Tarisvitsyandayenasta ite unmajavyachasta saha tatrapi sayata purvam asino punarevasa nyamajatarsanam yanme mrisakim sariletayo. Akrura thought, how can the two sons of Anakadundabi, who are sitting in the chariot, be standing there in the water? They must have left the chariot. But when he came out of the river, there they were on the chariot, just as before. Asking himself, was the vision I had of them in the water an illusion? Akrura re-entered the pool. Bhuyastatapi sudraksit stuyamanam ahishwaram siddhacharanagam dairvair asuram natakandarai sahasrasirasam devam sahasrapana molinam nilambaram visasvetam sringam svetam ivastitam. There Akrura now saw Anantases, the lord of the serpents, receiving praise from Siddhas, Charanas, Gandharvas and demons, who all had their heads bowed. The personality of Godhead, whom Akrura saw, had thousands of heads, thousands of hoods and thousands of helmets. His blue garment and his fair complexion, as white as the filaments of a lotus stem, made him appear like white Kailas mountain with its many peaks. So in this way we just move the harmonium actually. Okay, let's see. In this way we see that Akrura, on the way to Mathura, was taking Krishna and Balaram out of Vrindavan and saw this amazing manifestation of Krishna and Balaram in the water. First he saw Krishna and Balaram, then he saw Shesha. He basically saw how Krishna and Balaram were non-different from these personalities. And that way we can see Akrura was seeing the majesty of the Lord. He was seeing the majestic nature of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is behind this entire creation. And in that way we see how basically the sweet Vrindavan pastimes came to an end, and how Krishna in Vrindavan was Krishna and Balaram were cowherd boys. Balaram, of course, the son of Vasudev, a prince, not really a coward boy, but Krishna, a real coward boy, undoubtedly. Although Balaram was acting also like a coward boy, since he grew up in Vrindavan. But like that, they were... now, Akrura was in a different consciousness. Akrura was, even when coming to Vrindavan, he knew that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Akrura was very conscious of that. So Akrura was already in his mind offering prayers and so on. And Akrura, when he saw the footprints of the Lord, he rolled on the dust on those footprints. So his devotion was very deep, and he was greatly dedicated, but it was different than the devotion of the residents of Vrindavan, because Akrura was very conscious of the position of Krishna and also Balaram as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore Akrura, his love was on another level. Therefore Akrura counts as a devotee who is, in a sense, less exalted than the residents of Vrindavan. When Akrura took Krishna Balaram away from Vrindavan, then the gopis became very, very upset, and they cursed him. They cursed him for bringing so much grief to Vrindavan. And later, Akrura, due to that, became bewildered and became involved in some strange incident with that that jewel that was stolen, and some conspiracy. And Akrura was part of the conspiracy, which was really not a right activity for a devotee, to be part of conspiracies. And, but somehow or other, he was, at least conspiracies to murder someone, because that's what it was, to kill Satrajit. And Akrura sort of knew that Krishna wanted the jewel, so he wanted the jewel for Krishna, so that's why he joined. But even for Krishna, we should not... enter into such conspiracies, and to kill people and get jewels for Krishna is not so desirable. Not very desirable. Anyway, we can see how now there is the change begins in Krishna's pastimes. It said Krishna stays 11 years in Vrindavan only, which is very short. And he stays 125 years on the planet. So most of the time is spent outside in Mathura and Dwarka, and where Krishna is performing his transcendental duties as an incarnation of the Lord. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that the incarnations of the Lord, paritanaya sadhanam vinasaya sadushkritam dharma samstar pinartya sambhavami yuge yuge, they engage in establishing principles of religion and annihilating demons. Whereas Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead in Vrindavan, is just reciprocating the love of his devotees and nothing else. And that, of course, is the essence of our movement. That is our focus. Krishna's work of establishing Dharma in this world and annihilating demons is, in a sense, secondary work, which is also of interest to us, but not of the same level of interest as Krishna's loving exchanges, because the loving exchanges of Krishna are the essence of Lord Chaitanya's movement. That's it. Meanwhile, that's all good and well. We are ourselves so far from love of God. We are so much entangled in material life and struggling so much with either material desires or material difficulties, prakriti sthani karsati, that Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes are sweet, undoubtedly, and nice, but we cannot penetrate to the point that it will permanently satisfy our heart. See, we can get into the Vrindavan pastimes and it can excite us very much, but we cannot get into the Vrindavan pastimes to the point that our hearts will be fulfilled, because we're lacking in devotion, because one cannot enter into such pastimes just as a spectator. One has to enter as a participant. Yeah? And if one is only a spectator, that's not sufficient. Then one will not find that fulfillment, and after some time one will get restless and start looking for satisfaction elsewhere. And that means material desires will re-emerge. Therefore, it may be premature for us to exclusively focus on Vrindavan pastimes or on the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, although it's something very nice and sweet. And Prabhupada, of course, gave the Krishna book in early days because he wanted us to connect with these Vrindavan activities and Krishna's pastimes on this planet. That's important, because without, how else can we approach that other destination? Still, Prabhupada was mostly speaking philosophy. Mostly speaking about the position of the conditioned soul in the material world and how the conditioned soul can get out of the material world. And that is the topic of the Bhagavad Gita, because it's Arjuna who is the conditioned soul at that state in the Bhagavad Gita. Somehow or other, Arjuna is bewildered. Arjuna is asochana vasocha samprakya madam sabasa se gatasuna katas sochan. Start again. The point is that he was lamenting, mourning for what was not worthy of grief. So that is the conditioned soul's position, who somehow or other becomes attached to material things and begins to take the relationships with all these material things as very important. Where I am, what I have, what is happening, the circumstances. And it's very difficult to rise above. So somehow or other, when we look at the great liberated acharyas, then we look at personalities who were totally absorbed in the spiritual reality, just like Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who would rise at 11 p.m. and spend the whole night in absorption of Krishna. And then we read his songs, and we can just read how he's describing that he is, when he's seeing his deities, then he is seeing a whole spiritual world unfolding before his eyes. And he's just describing like that. He's saying he looks at Gorga Dadar and it makes him think of who Gorga Dadar are in their previous incarnation in Vrindavan, Radha and Krishna, and how and then he sees how Radha Madhava are performing pastimes, and he also sees a whole arti ceremony that is being offered by and he sees how the divine couple is seated. He sees how Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma are witnessing the arti, how Rupa Manjari is offering a garland, how Lalita Devi is waving a ghee lamp, and Ananga Manjari is preparing betel. He sees all these things. So very visionary, just from seeing the deity, he sees all these things. Sort of like we see the deity and say, nice, yeah, sort of like we look at the dressing and say, nice colors, pink or blue or green, and then you do good if you remember the color. Because many times we stand there for 5 minutes, go Govinda Madhi Purusham, and if someone says, what were they wearing today? It was very beautiful. It was amazing. What color? Well, sort of. You know, it's hard to describe. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur is describing every detail very vividly. And you're seeing so many vivid details. That is nice. Srila Prabhupada is saying that if you dress the deity very beautifully, as beautiful as you can, then the result is you will forget everything about the false beauty of the world. So that is the case of the acharyas, who forget everything about the false beauty of the world and just care about Krishna. And there's no limit to how much they can hear about Krishna, how much they can remember Krishna, meditate on Krishna, chant the name of Krishna. We are all limited in these things, and then have to come down. After some time chanting, we have to come down and stop and say, okay, now that was a lot of chanting, now let's do something with the material energy. So sooner or later it's natural for us to do something with the material energy. We want to, All right, so then that can be connected also with Krishna. Right, that's what we do next. We cannot stay up there, just absorbed in chanting. Like Haridas Thakur, who just not come down and just chant and stay there. Never stop and just continue to chant. And we see a similar thing. Kirtaniya Sadahari, continue and continue in Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Bhaktivinoda Thakur recommends a process which is also a little difficult for us, because he says you have to gradually increase the rounds, you know, until you're chanting 3 lakhs a day. So that's sort of like 3 lakhs a day, 175 rounds, if you calculate it strictly, or 192 if you go by 3 times 64, which is I think the way they count it. So that's a huge number of rounds, huge number. And is there even one day that we ever chanted so many rounds? Just one day in our life. You know, one day that we just said, like, okay, forget about everything, rest the day before, be completely fit, even eat, but not too much at night, so you're not hungry, not tired, and then the next day just go. 192. Wow. Yay, made it. And after that, we feel like 1 week vacation. It's like, it's just hard, you know, but every day. So that's only possible when the mind is not thinking of someone else or something else. So most of the time when we are chanting our rounds, our mind is thinking of something else. Our mind is thinking about something else it wants to do. And somehow or other, we have to chant. That's the only reason why chanting is difficult, because the mind wants to do something else. So, all right, that's our state of consciousness. And so that is a state where we are very much under the influence of our last lives. Many, many lives already we've been in this material world. And bhavanam jamananante kyanavamam prapadante vasudeva savamiti samahatma sudurdhava. Because we've been many lifetimes in the material world, we have accumulated many desires that are stored within our subconsciousness. And all these desires are still influencing us now from previous lives. And again, we are trying to enjoy them one more time, again and again, although we were not satisfied in previous lives, not fulfilled. Still, try again and again. Mm-hmm. So this is where we are. That's why spiritual life involves an element of struggle due to the influence of previous association with the material world. But just by hearing about Krishna, seeing Krishna in his deity form, chanting his name or prasadam or any other form of in which Krishna manifests himself, is enough to burn up so much of that previous karma. Therefore, we do change. That verse, which I used to forget a lot, somehow or other I tend to, it happens that you forget one line of a verse, and this one I always used to forget. And then one time I was in Bombay and I took a taxi, and the taxi driver quoted that verse. So then I felt a little embarrassed, here's the Swami and he can't even quote the verse. Got defeated by a taxi driver, so my false ego got me, and that worked better than my devotion, because Since then, I can remember the verse. Before I couldn't, so I'm going to try it now. Let's see if I still remember it. Nam nam yavti shakti papanirharane hare tavat kahartum avapnoti patakam patakinara. See? All glories to the taxi driver. There's no problem. I can easily remember it. It's amazing that when you get motivated by false ego, it's so easy. And when you have to do something on the strength of pure devotion, whew, it's a struggle. Anyway, so this verse says that if you chant the holy name once, that you burn up more sins than you can commit in a lifetime. So that's just an incredible amount of sins that are just burned up. I mean, think about a whole lifetime. Hare Krishna. Okay, one lifetime of sins gone. Hare Krishna, second part of the Maha Mantra. You know. Another lifetime. Krishna, Krishna. That's also two holy names. There you go. Two more lives. Four lives already gone, you know. Hare, Hare. Okay, that's Radharani counts as well. There you go, you know. Just halfway down the mantra. Six lifetimes burned up. Lots of sins. Do it again with Rama. And another six. There you go. 12 lives. Each Maha Mantra. That's like, you know, 108 times 12 is 1296 per round, you know. Lives that are just being burned up in terms of karma. So that times 16, it gets a little bit much for my brain early in the morning. 16 times 1296, but if there is a Gujarati, then they can calculate it. Yeah, it's easy. We could do. But, so many lifetimes daily of sinful activities are being burned up. So the purification is immense. And therefore the change that we are going through is also quite great, actually. We're changing substantially. Over time, really, we begin to notice that. It's like in the beginning, may not immediately notice it so much. In fact, in the beginning, thing, chanting like anything, not changing a bit. Still exactly the same I always was. Yes, but with more knowledge, and therefore a little more careful, not as foolish as you used to be. Sort of not just chasing after the most degraded types of sense gratification, although the mind is still a little bit attracted to these things, but due to knowledge, the intelligence has become strong enough to say no. So the changes are taking place. They're taking place. It may take a little bit longer, but at one point it's really going to happen. And we see how much devotees change. There was one devotee, he was always like, not so into listening to descriptions about Krishna or Bhagavatam or all these things. Just a devotee who was more into dollars, cents, money, and management, and you know, big plans and this and that, and I always used to think, you know, that's a lower level, right? You know, some people are just on a lower level and others are on a higher level. But now he's done it for so many years. And these days, he's dancing so blissfully, you know. He's just dancing so blissfully with so much taste, right? And I can see it's not artificial. And it's like, you know, food. And I don't always dance with that much taste. And I'm just thinking, wow, what happened? He did all that for Krishna. And somehow or other, that also produced the results. So, in Gita Nagari, there was Paramananda. And Paramananda was saying to Prabhupada that, I have no time. No time, no time for anything. Sometimes I don't even have time to chant 16 rounds. Just, you know, the cows have to be milked. What can you do? You have to, you know. It's, you can't just say like, well, sorry cows, I'm chanting. Yeah? I mean, these milk bags are full and these cows let you know, you know. And something has to be done about it. You can't just let it go. So, and Prabhupada told him something that was very difficult to believe, but he said to him, not to everyone else, but he said, Paramananda said, sometimes I can't finish my rounds. Prabhupada said, that's all right. No problem. Uh-huh. That's fine. Just keep on milking the cows. Right? Somehow or other, everything, our devotional service is also purifying us. I said it, that he said to him, that was a special license. We didn't get that license. Right? So, unless you get a special license, too bad. It's individual. Yeah, it's individual. I was in this one program where an initiation was held and different gurus were initiating a whole battery of people. It was quite a large initiation with like six gurus initiating and a whole bunch of disciples. So one of those that never end. Mm-hmm. Right? And yes, every candidate came forward and it was the same old thing, you know, like how many rounds, what are the regulated principles, da-da-da-da. So, you know, like four regulated principles and minimum 16 rounds. And at one point, in the middle of it all, Lokanath Maharaji was also initiating. He asks one Mataji, he asks her, and what are the number of rounds? She said, minimum 16. And then he says, how many rounds are you chanting on Ekadasi? And she goes like, she looks at him, you're not going to ask me, kind of, you know, with fear in her eyes, right? Like, you know, from, this is not happening to me, is it? It's not, right? You know, and then he asked her, so, how many rounds on Ekadasi? She goes like, 25? He says, yes, that's right, 25, every Ekadasi. And you know, she had to pay more. Yeah. She had to pay more that day. Yeah? And there's no customer service you can go to. Yeah. Yeah. You can't say, hey, every other customer has paid only 16 and they charged me 25. You know what I mean? How is this? You know what I mean? No. She had to pay 25 on Ekadasi for the same. For the same love of God. Why? Only Lokanath Maharaj knows, you know. Yeah? It was a remarkable thing though, you know. I mean, I was sitting there watching it and thinking, this is amazing. This is just something else, right? It's just, yeah, it's just the guru determines the price. Jeez. Yeah. And she has to pay more. What to do? I didn't promise that, and I don't always do it on Ekadasi either. 25 rounds. Depends what I'm doing on Ekadasi and how tired I am and so on. Some days I chant more, some days I chant less. Like all of us, I think. Yeah. Hmm.
special mercy. Sanarada, she got. Right? That's how you have to see it. So, but it's interesting how ultimately the guru is there as an individual and can just can just decide, can just fill it in as he likes. So yes, we are totally dependent on our spiritual master. Yes, we have our relationship with Krishna, but if our guru is not pleased with us, then Krishna doesn't want to know us, right? As simple as that. Then you can go to Krishna and say, "Hey, Krish, how you going? How you going, Krish? Just been in Australia. Great." You know, yeah. And then he's sort of cold, not reciprocating, because that's basically what happens. That's the process, that one must take shelter of a Vaishnava, and we see that in the spiritual world. Everyone is the servant of someone else, and that's the only way. The only way that one can please Krishna. Gopi Partapada Kamalayar Dasana Dasana Das. So, and otherwise not possible to please Krishna. As sometimes I've brought up the point that we have to please the spiritual master. Then, when somehow or other, by an act of fate, mercy of my spiritual master and Krishna, I somehow or other became a spiritual master, then I start looking at it from the other side. Then I start looking at, like, the disciple has to please the spiritual master. Now, so I'm supposed to be the one now that has to be pleased, right? So, does that mean I have to be really pleased? Or does it mean that when a certain standard, you know, of reasonable level of devotion, of surrender in devotional service is reached, that then spiritual master is pleased? Yeah. It's thinking, no, I guess it means I have to be really pleased. Yeah. Well, I'm hard to please. I always was, you know. I always was. I'm not easily pleased. Yeah? It's sort of like, you know, quite demanding personality, actually, you know, to be the truth. Yeah, it's nice, you know, it's nice, but that is Krishna also. Krishna's also like that. It's nice, but... I was reading yesterday how Prabhupada was training Yamuna personally in deity worship. So that was quite something. He was worshipping the deity himself and then engaged her and in doing the same, and he was watching. So, and one day she got spontaneous, and just while Prabhupada was, he let her do it, he wasn't watching anymore, and then she put flowers all over. Yeah? And Prabhupada said, Oh, that is very nice. That is very nice. Huh? He said, Krishna must be very pleased. Very pleased. Yes. That you just spontaneously, you know, like, try to make it so nice. And then he said, but it can still be nicer. Yeah? So same thing, you know. Prabhupada also, like, very pleased, but still can be more pleased, can still be nicer. And then he took all the flowers off and he put them again, and then he took, like, all the small flowers he put around Krishna, and then sort of went size-wise, gradually with bigger flowers away from Krishna and then all the big flowers on the outside. So that in that way, Krishna was less covered by the flowers. And, that he was coming out more. And Prabhupada said, yes, this is how we should dress Krishna. We should bring him out. We should bring him out rather than cover him. So spiritual life is like that. There's always a higher standard. There's always another level of realization. And that is why, we always remain a fool before the spiritual master. Tamal Krishna Maharaj said that in front of Srila Prabhupada. He said, yes, I'm just a fool. Prabhupada said, that's very good. That's very good. As long as you think like that, that's very good. Because then I can instruct you. That as soon as you think that you're intelligent, then how can I instruct you? So this relationship with the spiritual master is the most difficult one. It's the most difficult relationship because here's a person who has a level of authority in our life that even our parents never had. I mean, when you're a small child, it's your parents have all authority up to a point, where you can cry. You can cry in protest, right? And then finally, when you can speak, you can say, no. You can go in your no face, right? Which is a well-known face that each child goes through. And many of us never get out of that. to no face. No. So what to do? That's very, very strong. And then suddenly, you get involved with the Hare Krishna movement, and there's a spiritual master, and now you have to stop saying no. See, there are more sophisticated ways of saying no. Well, one is, I don't agree. his arguments don't make sense. Right? It doesn't make sense what the guy says. His arguments completely don't make sense. Right? But all that with the spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta is speaking about this, and he says this mundane logic doesn't apply. He says, when the spiritual master speaks, in the beginning you think, it doesn't make sense what he's saying. It doesn't make sense. But somehow or other, if one hears submissively, then with time it begins to make more sense, more and more sense, and ultimately begins to make full sense. How can God be a person and at the same time be the origin of everything? Doesn't make sense. There's a few more things you have to find out. That he's not what kind of a person, not just a person like we know so far, but an unlimited person and then it makes sense after all. So it is pointed out that there are so many apparent contradictions even in the scriptures. But that as we go deeper in knowledge, we find out that actually they're not contradictions. They were only apparent contradictions. Because we had incomplete knowledge, insufficient knowledge. So, not only intellectual knowledge, but actual knowledge. As I sat down on the flight from Sydney to here, this boy sat next to me, and he just began to share with me that that Jesus had revealed himself to him, you know what I mean? I thought, oh no. For 14 hours next to him. Oh God. 14 hours next to a Bible basher, that's going to be intense, you know. So, and sure enough, you know, he just went for it. After a while, I put my earphones on and looked at my, turned on a movie on my iPad, you know, just to escape him for a while. And then he started again, and then I said, well, you know, the attack is the best defense, right? So I just, he had already, you know, he asked me whether we had Satan in our religion. Well, then I got him, like, the whole Satan thing, you know. Because there's a big contradiction there, you know, like, here's God and he's all good, and there is Satan, he's a rebellious angel who's out of control. How can he be out of control if God is almighty? And if God allows him to do all this evil, then how is God all good? And he shares the responsibility, he's in cahoots. He's in cahoots with Satan, there you go. The latest news is that God and the, actually, God and the devil are sharing the profit. It all comes out. Just see. Just see. Huh? Isn't it? It has to be. Because otherwise, if he's almighty, he would stop him straight away. Huh? If I was, you know, if the government was almighty, there would be no crime. You know. I mean, they say, it's like sometimes you hear these things, like the American government, right? They know where every nuclear submarine of the enemy is. They keep complete track of it, right? But they cannot. They can track down submarines that go under the sea, right? And exactly know where they are. But they cannot track down a boat from Colombia which is loaded up with drugs and shipped off to the United States of America. They can't track those boats. Impossible. Impossible. Why? Because they ship them themselves. Huh? Something like that, you know? So they say like that sometimes, and it makes sense, right? So this time I'm proposing the same. God is in cahoots with the devil. Because it's all going on. Why doesn't he stop it if he's almighty? Anyway, I got our friend there totally bewildered. I enjoyed it greatly. I told him that it was a revenge for him for all his intolerant preaching, for Jesus is the only way, you know, and all that. So this is what you get for that now. Tell them out. Yeah. So I don't know why I got to this Christian thing, but I guess I'm still a little confused from the flight.
It's about that the disciple can't understand what the guru is saying, and they make him know I can't understand what he's saying. That
yeah.
was the previous point, and
yes.
just.
Okay, and I went off into a side lane, yes.
How he was hearing our...
Okay, what a memory, huh?
No, I'm writing.
Ah.
Well. They say Brahman in Kali Yuga has to have a pen.
It's good, huh?
Or an iPad.
An iPad. Good. The
poor Brahman.
He can mention a few other machines. Yeah, a chip in his brain. Yeah. Yes, so somehow or other, one has to remain a fool, or rather first become one. That's not so easy, yeah, because we never thought we were, really. Personally, I never really thought I was a fool. I always knew that I was smarter than other people. So what to do now, you know? So one has to actually, eventually in Krishna consciousness, come to the sincere realization that we are less intelligent. It's very hard, you know, to give up this concept of ourselves that I have a brain, right? And to actually come to the point that you realize, actually, I'm not so intelligent. And my problem is, I have too much faith in my intelligence. Yeah, so humility is quite something. Of course, some intelligence we may have, but it's not so significant. And when even Lord Brahma, who is the most intelligent living entity in the whole universe, realizes that his intelligence falls short, then where are we? Pantastakoti sattavatsa sampragamya. With intelligence, we'll never figure it out. Therefore, one must rely on Krishna and his representatives. Time, no? 10 to 10. I quickly took breakfast before. I thought it was intelligent. Possibly some of you also had a little snack already. You're probably also that intelligent. But some of you may actually be hungry now. And it's 10 to 10. So let's go over to the questions and see if there are answers.
In the beginning you spoke of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and I have a question. How do we distinguish between imagination and spiritual vision?
Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a liberated soul, and one doesn't become a liberated soul by himself. No. One needs to be recognized by the Vaishnavas before one is qualified to express vision. Yeah. Otherwise, we can also, you know, imagine things about Krishna, right? Everybody's like, you know, take a deep breath, close your eyes. We're going back in time, back a little more, still further back. 5,000 years ago, we're in Vrindavan, green parrots everywhere. And so on. Okay, we can imagine we're there, and what we see, we can imagine. And you know, probably it will be a combination of what we've read, pictures we have seen, and then you know, and then some experiences we have in this world, and we mix it all together, you know, and put a little Hollywood. And then we've got it, you know, our vision of the spiritual world through the mind's eye. But that is different than when it's revealed. In the Chaitanya Chandramrita, Prabodhananda Saraswati says that in the earlier stages of bhakti, meditation means that we are trying to visualize Krishna within the mind. In bhava, that's when Krishna appears in our meditation. You see? So then that's the difference. So in bhava, it gets real. There, Krishna actually begins to manifest himself. So that's the Shastric conclusion of the whole answer.
Which scripture?
Chaitanya Chandram Rita.
You're speaking about the pure pastime, and I was thinking that what happens in a situation where we might have a service that causes distress to devotees, let's say maybe management or whatever else it is, you know, is it like on the upper round level?
Yeah, you. So when managers offend devotees in the course of their managerial duties, they also get reactions for it. So managers have to be careful that they, even in the course of management, treat devotees very respectful. And therefore, even if a devotee, if they have to punish a devotee or take action against a devotee, right, who has just stolen, you know, some money from Krishna. So, you caught him in the office now. So, you rat, you know what I mean? So, you stole Krishna's money. Well, we'll begin with cutting your sika. Big scissors. Okay, what next, you know? Okay, you have any bank card, credit card, or anything like that? Where is it? Put it on the table. Okay. And we're going to go to the ATM now and look at what you got in your account. Okay, we can intimidate someone in a heavy way. But it's not really... I think a better way to deal with it, yeah, is not to cut the sika. Yeah, say, well, and to explain to the person, you know, Prabhu, you know, like somehow or other, you have blown it big time. Right? You had such an opportunity, yeah, to just finish up lifetimes and lifetimes of sinful activity and finally get out of suffering, and now you have just done this, you know. We got to set it straight somehow, I think. So as a manager, you still have to approach it very much from a Vaishnav etiquette type of platform, and not just from like management platform, and you very easily slip into it. You know, I mean, I've been in management meetings where a person's case, a problem case, let's say, was discussed, and they spoke about him. Then it's decided, okay, we're going to hear him. Yeah, he's going to bring him in. Someone's is chosen to be the spokesman, and then he is there, and there's a certain exchange, and then it's kind of polite, and then after he's gone, behind his back, you know, it's like, did you hear what the guy said? Da, 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 etc. He was outraged. I've seen this thing. This kind of double-faced approach is risky, because very easily offenses are made. So a manager must always deal according to the situation, you know, Krishna's interest to be protected, but always with Vaishnava etiquette. Then there will be no offense. That means always respectful, always on dealing with the Vaishnava, not just, you know, we have Vaishnavas and we have those who stepped over the line, and they're actually not Vaishnavas. Even if, you know, a Vaishnava commits a crime, still treat him like a Vaishnava. Or anything less. Always deal with him like a Vaishnava. Then there will be no offense. Vaishnava always you treat with respect. And if you made a mistake, okay, you can try to help him to get over it.
See in the past, and actually Satyabala was in the palace when it happened. And then Shatadana came in and he basically butchered, Prabhupada said he butchered Satyajit, like a butcher's an animal, and then there was this big affair. They're on the screening and then he ran away with the jewel. But I was just thinking that it's so amazing that, because it must have been quite a traumatic experience, and I was thinking, are these kind of reversals or like bad things that we see happen in Krishna Vilas? Is that part of like a material pastimes, or does these kind of things also have a spiritual? Because obviously Vaishnava, what is he? Is he actually like a bad person, or is he just part of the ego? I don't know.
No, he was a bad person. But at the same time, you can look at Krishna's pastime like some sort of big transcendental roadshow, you know, with like actors who are playing the parts, right? And then they pack up and it's kind of over, and they do it again in another universe or something like that, next city, you know, and the show is on, do it again. But sometimes Krishna plays a part, right? Sometimes one of Krishna's liberated devotees plays a part. But many times the parts are played by real demons, real fallen conditioned souls. And obviously, that was atrocious activity. And then you see, you know, like these pastimes of Krishna, they're here in the material world, and they contain all these kind of material experiences also, that like you don't have in the spiritual world, you know. So that's not in the spiritual world. There is no murder, right? It's like, you know, murder doesn't exist because nobody dies, and everyone has spiritual bodies, so you know, you can try with a big knife, you know, but nothing happens. Nobody will even try. I'm saying it's like, you know, murders are just not part of the spiritual world, which is sort of difficult to imagine a world without murder, you know? But yeah, that's how it is. So, but then we see that in the pastimes of Krishna, all these elements, they do come in, theft, murder, that's all. And that's partially staged for us, right, obviously, so that all the emotions that come out in the course of material life are also dealt with in Krishna's pastimes, and so we can identify. But so from Krishna's point of view, it is staged. It is obviously everything that's happening is what he wants to what he wants that happens. But he gives facility to different demons to play the part, you know, in his script, and just live out their demonic desires. Satadanta, he did it. He killed Satyajit for the jewel and butchered him. not exactly very decent. Quite demoniac. So yeah, got his reactions. There are pots and pans moving, there's a head sticking out of the kitchen. I think that's the good thing about home program, it's sort of the connection between the kitchen and the living room is well established. In a temple it takes a little longer. So I think without further ado, we should go on and have prasad. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.